are we going to be able, as housing advocates, to paint a compelling picture of how we all do better? We do better when we see ourselves as one country, as one community, as that diversity really does is a great, it's not just like a good idea, it's good for everyone.
So well, even if like I want to agree with you,
that's right.
And I'm on your side.
Right.
If you're angry all the time,
that's
it's
right.
Sort of like,
that's right.
I gotta channel my energy
yeah.
somewhere else.
Yeah. And it's missing the key point of our whole movement, which is that we can create a place for everyone.
Yeah.
And that includes
NIMBYs. Perhaps
that includes NIMBYs.
Can it include NIMBYs?
It does. And in fact, it has to.
I mean, it's really personal to me. Like, I want my life to be better, right? And so I'm not like, I don't feel like it's all about some altruistic, like, I want to make the world better, generally speaking.
That's
somehow.
Right.
Like, I want my life to be better.
Hello, Boulder and the wider world. This is the Sharing Boulder Podcast. My name is Philip Ogren, and for our 7th episode, my co-host David Adamson and I sat down on his front porch and caught up with each other on a sunny summer Sunday morning. The topics we explored in our conversation included Bedrooms Are for People, Nextdoor.com, the upcoming elections, how the housing market should work, how to make friends and influence people, and future episodes.
One of the things I learned from Sarah Wiebenson is that I'm a NIMBY. And the way I learned that was she explained the difference between commercial affordable and goods and services affordable.
Right.
And those two are in tension with each other and are not the same thing. And
right.
and the thing that sort of came clear is that, you know, they said they did a survey of people living in just you know, poor people in town. They did a survey
right.
of what do you want in town, and they're like, we want drive-throughs,
right.
and we want a Walmart,
like a Walmart, yeah.
And I'm like, you know, nothing kind of raises my NIMBY hackles like let's have a new Chick-fil-A or a Walmart 12,000 you know, 12 acre.
Well, this
Walmart. Complex.
I want to help. Yeah. I want you to give yourself a break.
So I'm a NIMBY.
Well,
to some extent.
Okay, well, technically speaking, that's true. But to being a YIMBY doesn't mean yes to everything in my backyard.
Totally.
And I think it's an important distinction to make that Amory Lovins has often made, is that, you know, people don't want coal-fired power plants. They want a
yeah.
cold beer, and they want a warm house, and they want the services, they want the comfort, they want
yeah.
the quality of this or that. And I think our duty as folks interested in environmental quality and in racial equity and equality is, hey, there can be a win-win. Let's, you know, and in fact, there has to be.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the thing about today, right? So let's try to tee that up a little further, because I want to know what you think about the importance of this time, this next few months before the election, and how you're feeling about it. What?
Yeah, well, I mean, I've been really hyper-focused this spring on Bedrooms Are for People and thinking about, like, this one simple reform to start changing things. And I think I really admire this group because they have pitched a wide tent, and this measure that they put together, they really put so much thought into, like, the language and the organization, you know, making an organization that is transparent, that people feel like they can show
up,
great. Have a voice, have an opinion, get involved, do the work, you know. So they just, I mean, they delegate and they do a good job of having discussion and people feeling like they can voice their grievances, or we have a Slack channel, and the Slack channel has, you know, a positives you know, just like stuff that's good in your life, you know.
Nice.
People post pictures of themselves hiking or with their dogs or whatever. And so it's been a community that I've really enjoyed being a part of. I'm really impressed by how the petition campaign went despite the difficulties of doing it online with the electronic petition. And, you know, we overcame that because so many people are interested in making this change. So, yeah, that's kind of where my head's at. And really going into the fall, I want to make sure that reform gets passed on the ballot. For my part, I haven't paid much attention yet to who's running, who's thinking about running, what's the progressive slate going to be. So,
well, I want to recognize Veterans for People for their initiative, and I went to a little celebration party they had. I guess I just missed you, but uh-huh. And because I gave them a plant and some snacks, and you know, but especially yeah. to Eric and yeah. Chelsea, who I wanted to recognize, and it's a broad movement with a lot of folks working hard, but you know, Eric's had a very long time, a dedicated public servant. I mean, he really yeah. insists on making things better. And so
he keeps showing up, right?
He keeps showing up.
City council meetings,
yeah.
planning board meetings,
yeah.
you know, rallying
he's about
troops
it.
For, you know, getting people to show up to these things.
And so I wanted to recognize them. You know, a yeah. lot of people are doing that. They don't get recognized enough. It's like, yeah. hey, brother, you know, thank you. Yeah. That's so beautiful. You're yeah. working so hard. Yeah. It's just like awesome. And I really would like to have an annual award ceremony for people in yeah. this town who are like that. But I do, I talked a little bit about it in my little comments while I was, you know, toasting each of them. But then a little bit more to some of the volunteers because, you know, without throwing anyone
no,
under
just say it. It's okay.
Without throwing anyone in the bus too much. But, you know, there's a lot of anti sort of, you know, not anti NIMBY, but sort of us versus them. And
yeah.
how, you know, can you believe these people that think this? And
yeah.
it's just a natural thing to be partisan. And I want to just exhort us all, because we want to be successful,
yeah.
to you know, understand that, you know, everyone needs to see how compelling our vision is about, you know, more environmental, more healthy, better for business. It is to have a more compact development pattern and to have, you know, low carbon transportation. It's just better.
Well,
it creates a better community. So we don't want to, last thing, we don't want to, like, decrease our chances of having a better community by being
yeah.
divisive.
Yeah. Well, one way that us versus them really, you know, just comes out so hard is in the Bedrooms Are for People Slack channel. There's a lot of riffing on things people say on nextdoor.com, which is sort of like really like
we should do a separate show on that. We should
but nextdoor.com is really understood as being like where all the reactionary NIMBYs just spew bullshit, you know, and they just they spread misinformation and they complain about this and that. There was this woman who complained about, oh, if this gets, like, the parking is already so bad, I had to move my RV out of my driveway from Boulder to Longmont so that I would have parking in my driveway because, you know, all the students take up the parking on the streets. And it's like, this is like, the effing problem is like, right? There's too much parking in this city. Anyways, it's people. I have that emotional reaction to the kind of stuff on Nextdoor.
Absolutely. I do too. And I don't know how much we're going to use of what we were talking about before in my unguarded moments. But you know, I think it starts with self-compassion.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I'm effing pissed off about NIMBYs too, and I can't when I start to see that on Nextdoor. I rarely go to Nextdoor, but Anyway, I'm just, and I'm in the street. I mean, I can't believe I haven't been arrested already for my kind of road raging on bicycling, on bicycles. And then I laugh at myself and be like, what am I doing? What can I do? But anyway, I want to ask you about a next door a little bit, about how, why, just pretend you're one of those folks coming from grievance, coming from,
On the NIMBY side?
Yeah, well, why do you think there's so much vitriol there?
Yeah, well, I think subconsciously we all know that the world is not working super well. Like there's things that are kind of falling apart at the seams, and we want to, like, hold it together, right? So anything that kind of enters our personal sphere of, like,
This is falling apart.
We get real defensive and reactionary, and it's like, and it's not cool and measured. It's like everything's like falling apart now because
that's right.
Because this building is being considered, or this, you know, property is going to the planning board or whatever, you know. And
well, that's how I think we shared Bob Yates' observation in all his campaigning, talking to people, but for everyone, you know, they've moved to Boulder, and the best day they ever had in Boulder was their first day, and everything was going downhill. Everything's been going downhill in Boulder since then. But I want to loop back into George Packer's point about Smart America, where the meritocracy, where people feel that they've worked hard, they've gotten to a certain accomplished place. And then link in with what you just said about, you know, sort of fortress Boulder, you know, the walled in Boulder, and hey, we've created a great place, and I bought my place in this special place, and darn it, if, you know, it's,
and I made a good gamble,
and it's all working out great,
yeah,
and you know, I think that all to be honored, those are all, you know, virtuous things about, you know, Pat, the thing, I know you're shaking your head, but I want to just go with it a little bit more. Because it's concern for community, and they care about, passionately about something.
That's true.
And about the quality of the community as they see it, and they feel that it's threatened. And just what you said, things are falling apart everywhere, but hey, you know, we can kind of keep it together here, you know, we can kind of keep it together here.
Yeah, and I often talk about how, like, isolating suburban sprawl is, and then I also say that Boulder is full of suburban sprawl style neighborhoods, but I actually don't see, like, lots of neighborhoods as being, like, just complete desolate isolation where no neighbors know each other, or, like, everyone just drives straight in their garage. I feel like there's a lot of neighbors, even in the suburban style sprawl type neighborhoods, who really know each other, who really care about their community. They show up to all kinds of groups, you know, there's men's groups and women's groups and yoga going on, and, you know, a lot of it's organic and friends spending time with each other. And so I don't want to be too cynical about how much people love their communities here in Boulder.
Well, and this is the thing, I'm coming back to the advice for bedrooms are for people. We don't want to make enemies. We don't have to. And it's easy for people to feel attacked.
Yeah.
When you're not attacking that they're good, we're not saying they're bad people. We're not saying that their yoga group is bad.
Yeah.
We're not saying their community is bad. I think, go ahead.
Well, even more to the point is, like, are we going to attack people who own their homes outright and have had all this wild financial success?
Yeah.
Because their homes have appreciated. I mean, we don't want to be tone deaf, right? As I'm not a homeowner, so I can't say as homeowners, but you know, people who are doing well in the city, I don't think we want them to be tone deaf to the struggles that other people are having. And I don't think we want to be fawning over their success and congratulating them all the time. But there's something really important in participating in the economy and doing well for yourself and your family, making good financial choices and building up prosperity. And I don't think we want to, like, tear down all the prosperity. We want to, like, bring more people into it. That's, I don't know, that's sort of how I
Well, I think that that's right on in a respect, but just like Robin DiAngelo's White Fragility and all the great books on this topic are showing that a lot of people have no idea how much that prosperity is built on stolen labor, and it goes on today. And so, you know, this is where we have a fine line as advocates of, you know, helping people understand, like, it's really never been a great day in America for Native Americans. You know, it's never been a great day for a lot of African Americans. It's not a great day for a lot of working white people and working Americans.
Yeah.
And that's because, this is the central thing I'm trying to promote in this, in our conversation today, is to understand the impossibility of us having a satisfying housing and community formation in anywhere if you have these values of inclusion and equity and strong community and honoring differences and environmental quality. I mean, so you have those values making it easy to get around without a car, which and a market in land. So a market, a free market, quote, free market, which is, there's no free market. Anyway, the point is the market allocates scarce goods and resources to the highest bidder.
Yeah.
So we have a great example. I mean, I've said it before, but in open space, we said, no, you have to take that out of the speculative market. And similarly, you have to do that for housing and community, but both for businesses, a lot of businesses, and for houses. And that doesn't mean people can't gain some equity, but it just will never work. You can never reconcile the two things. But what do you think about that point? So it doesn't mean you get rid of wealthy houses, or, you know, it just means that a big proportion of the land has to be primarily for housing for people. They can make a little money, like we're trying to do at this co-op we're building across the street. Or we could just, in a variety of ways, without a big subsidy, you could just withdraw a lot of properties from the market, and so people get to gain something. But it's for sale. People live there. It's their home. And they get to feel strong and possessive about it, like all our NIMBY friends do. Yeah.
Well,
but it's mixed, and then you can have mixed incomes all living together.
So I'm excited about our upcoming interview with an economist.
Yes.
One of the things that I just struggle with intellectually is the free market distorted by all these rules and regulations with the zoning limitations and the cost of building, you know, is extraordinary. Or is it flipped? So that's kind of like the conservative fiscal argument that, you know, well, we just need to free things up and let a freer market do a more efficient job of allocating goods and resources. Or is it flipped on its head where, our ability to allocate things is distorted by all these free market, distortions that, You have investor conglomerates that can come in and buy a property for $16 million and take the liquor store out and put up luxury condos, and
what a nightmare.
Yeah, well, I love luxury condos. I hope to own one someday, but and so I feel like we need a lot more of them.
This to me Philip, my dear friend, this to me reflects the decades of propaganda by the free market to which you've been subjected.
Yeah.
So
but I meant it as a real something I'm wrestling with. I mean, because I totally don't, like, for me, the free market is, I grew up with the free market being equivalent to a healthy market, a healthy market means you keep loosening everything up so that it's like all the wheels are greased,
Right.
And I don't see it that way at all. Like a healthy market might require lots of regulation, lots of rules for how the game is played.
Well,
go ahead. Tell me about how it grew up.
Well, no, I think it's just like the white fragility issue that white people can never really get it. It's very hard for us to get, like, you know, the police are like always watching you. Like, I never thought that. I never thought the police were always watching me, you know. I didn't think I was going to get stopped and shot. But, I mean, you know, it's a real thing. Or, you know, that they, you know, American troops come in and they take your land and they kill you no matter what you say or do. They just, like, you're... You know, we don't appreciate your way of life. We don't want your native way of life.
For all this to be going on, for us to be over here, like, free market, you know, it's great, wonderful, you know. And it's really like, okay, where did all this wealth come from? Like, to your point.
Well, and that's, I think, just to tee up a couple of episodes that we have coming up, and we'll talk about it in that episode, but how the... land-owning class, the resource-owning class, the robber barons, they founded a bunch of schools of economics. And it was just at that time that Marx ideas were getting out. And they the Haymarket incident in Chicago in 1886 was probably the police themselves in Chicago. I think like six policemen were killed or something like that. And right through... you know, today, the idea of attacking markets and their outcomes is hidden, and they conflated land as capital with other kinds of capital, financial and industrial capital, and they're very different. Land is created by the creator, and you know, like, you know, they're not creating any more of it. It's ours. And most societies see land in some way that way, that we share it. It's a different kind of thing.
Yeah. It's
that
not,
we
it's
all
not
share.
A commodity.
It's not a commodity.
You can't make more of them.
You can't make more of them. So Henry George said, is the major source in his beautiful book, Progress and Poverty, in 1879. That is the major source of inequality. That's the book. He says, why do we have inequality in the United States? Why, amidst this incredible industrial... expansion, does poverty persist and deepen? Why is that? And he says, because some people have a leg up and they get the land, they get the timber, they get the resources. You know, the fresh air, they get the resources,
the means of production,
but he made a very important, and I think again for our point about being compelling, having a new vision that like everybody gets, he said, don't tax labor. You want more labor. A tax is to discourage something you don't want.
Yeah.
Don't tax capital, real capital. Someone has an idea, some entrepreneur, you know, put something together. A social entrepreneur like Bedrooms for People. But, you know, it's really beautiful that people, it's not easy to do, put something new together. So don't tax that. Just tax that unearned increase in land value that comes from a successful community.
Yeah.
How's
land,
the universe?
Land value tax? Is that what you
call it? Yeah, that's, and it's hard to implement. It's definitely occurred. We'll talk some more about it in the economic session. But I just want to link that with what you were saying before about concerns about the market with, we hope to be talking to Jeff Salzman about integral theory and their post-progressive, and Steve McIntosh, his colleagues, written Post-Progressive Politics, which is the idea of honoring all the different, you know, we'll go into that more, but the different types of folks looking at life, you know, let's honor them all and...
Honoring lots of points of view.
Honoring lots of points of view.
Traditional points of view, for example, have truth in them. So do the...
Authority.
So does the modern approach.
Order.
Yeah.
You know, tribal connectedness and, you know, honoring spiritual values. I mean, the modern perspective of and the Enlightenment of let's make progress, let's make things, let's build things, let's make things better, let's have public health, you know, etc.
So I can we keep going with the economic theme?
Yes, sure.
One of the things I'd like to circle back on is when we talk about land markets and you know whether we want more like a free market or like we want to. Rig. I don't want to say rig the system, but
well,
we want to have rules.
Control it. Yeah.
Have more controls over how it unfolds. You know, one of the things that brings to mind for me is one of the arguments you've made a lot about affordable housing and how, like, affordable housing, you know, city council people or people in Boulder are really proud of our affordable housing program.
Just
that we have.
Justifiably, yeah.
Well, perhaps.
I admire the effort and the attempt to do something.
But to me, it's a program that's super expensive.
Right.
And while we've gone from 0 to 9% deed restricted affordable, you've argued that, you know, we've gone from like 35% to zero, near 0% market rate affordable. And so, you know, instead of thinking about how markets work and making it more efficient, having a better efficiency of resources, you know, maybe trying to remove distortions, we've instead tried to impose on this super expensive,
that's right,
really slow, you know, and it turns, and you know, it's so inefficient at providing housing that the people who qualify for it have to enter into a lottery and get selected by chance, which to me just doesn't feel like a structural solution that's inclusive. You know, it feels like, and then, I mean, you know, one of the things Richard Rothstein talks about is, you know, the wealth accumulation that African Americans have missed out on because the distortions in the way mortgages were given out, and now we say, okay, poor person, you can play this lottery where you can now have this deed restricted house, but you can't accrue much. You can't accrue wealth like everyone else.
That's right.
You know, and so to me that feels like, well, that feels kind of icky to me.
The for sale ones. I think it's 3%.
Yeah.
You know, there's 800 in the city of Boulder. I think there's about 800 for sale houses.
So the thing I want to say in defense of markets is that market forces really want a lot of development to happen. You know, developers would love to see zoning radically reformed and just start building cool stuff everywhere all over the city, right? And then that would increase supply. And so markets want to increase supply. I think we both want more housing for people in the city. And so I don't know, there's something to that where, like, I would rather try to figure out how to leverage that force to move in our direction rather than this sort of, you know, we're going to pick the most expensive and possible way of tackling this with this affordable housing program. But I do feel like, you know, if it's really all just about greasing the wheels and removing regulations so that, you know, the capitalist machine can just march through and build as much shit as possible, that's not good either, right? We want to have something that's beautiful at the end.
Well, and that's what's going on today. We have a free market in Boulder. It's very free, and the capitalist forces are building they're allocating goods and resources to the highest bidder. So,
well, except I would say that.
So we're building lots of luxury condos, and that's all we're building.
Yeah, that's true. I can't argue that.
And all the NIMBY people aren't out with their pitchforks about that.
No,
the people
not.
In Gun Barrel aren't. You know, this is what I wanted to say at the Spine Road thing, and I couldn't get it together to speak up to say, if you guys are concerned about some apartments for people who really need housing right next to you, you don't want it next to you, why don't you come and help us in Boulder so we can build a lot more housing throughout the city in a way that is beautiful for everyone. The point is, it will be good for everyone if it's done well. And the NIMBYs have a big concern about how that it might, that, you know, that they're not even considering, let's think about how it could be done well. They're just, no, because, like, you know, I say, we haven't done a compelling job of how we could do that in a beautiful way. And you and I know how great it is to bike around and have more compact development.
So this kind of just as a preview, we're going to have an architect who's interested in design around how to build meaningful space for housing and commercial.
Brian Bond.
Yeah, so that'll be a fun conversation.
Well, that I think those are three poles there of our upcoming shows that I think we're really grappling in
those,
a good
way
with it.
Economics, architectural design, you know, how to design cool stuff, and then just like kind of the holistic spiritual.
Well, and values.
Values.
You know, what can we implement our values?
Yep.
You know, that's what I think we're trying to achieve with this podcast, right? Is we can show that actually we can have it all.
I'm stuck on something. I'm irritated by something you said because you said we have a free market that the rich developers are coming in and build luxury condos. And I just want to push back on that a little bit because as you know from painful personal experience, building luxury condos is literally the only thing you can build in this city.
That's right.
That makes economic sense given the rules that the way it's set up. I mean, you just can't build affordable housing and make money doing that. It's not compelling. You need to have grants and you need to have
Well, let's try to. I think we should clarify for our listeners and ourselves what we're talking about.
Oh, yeah, because
I think this is a big problem.
It's a loaded word.
Well, okay. But. So what it means in the city is that it's housing that's affordable to people who make 60% or below, mm-hmm. you know, or 60 to 80%. I think that's moderate. It's 60 to 80. They make low income housing is 60% or below of the median. The Boulder County, and it's different parts of the country.
Can you believe we've normalized that as being like that's like the range that you need to be in to qualify for affordable housing? That's just, I mean, kind of on the face of it, that's crazy, right? Like you would think, a normal distribution, the people in the middle would be able to afford housing, and then going this way, people would be able to afford more expensive and less expensive, you know. But it's like it's so skewed like this that what you said actually sounds like, oh, that's just how it is.
Well, it's important that people understand, and I think what's cool about our podcast is we're trying to bring enlightenment to ourselves and others, but people just haven't thought a lot about it. People generally have a very low understanding of this housing issue in Boulder, and that's why looking forward to this election, you know, I'm trying to help bring out people who don't usually vote in municipal elections who would benefit from more compact, more healthy, you know, lower carbon transportation. And do some issue focus around housing and you know, some other issues, so that we can just up our game in terms of being engaged citizens who bring it. And reform is a tough thing, and reform often misses the mark, and for all sorts of reasons, it doesn't achieve its goals, and then it loses its momentum, and then it's back to the forces of wealth in the country. They never sleep.
Yeah,
they're well funded. They, you know, they've got, they're healthy, they're, you know, they're strong, and they always come back. And that's been the problem with the land value tax, is once it's implemented, as it was pretty broadly in Pennsylvania, and it's in Denmark and Singapore, I'm not an expert, and Australia has been, but it's constantly attacked and watered down, and it loses its effectiveness when it is watered down, because the higher the tax of taking that unearned income, the better the depressing impact it has on land value. And we're going to talk some more about it, but I just want to try to highlight for us what a horrible drag on the economy high rents and high land values are. Now, you don't want to have like super depressed land values either. I mean, I haven't thought enough about that. Totally. I don't think we're in danger of that here in Boulder Harbor. But it's a horrible drag. People just have to spend so much money. They could spend on education. Yeah. They could spend on gifts for me and you. They could spend money on other things, but they have to spend so much money on rents. And it's a narrow group of people that
who
benefits from that.
Yeah, who can get themselves on the other side of that equation.
But, you know, it's an amazing thing, and it's because, not because of the market, really. It's because of the rules that we made around the market.
Sure.
You know, getting back
for
to
sure.
your point.
Yeah. Yeah, so, I mean, the trick is, how do you get a healthy market? So, what I'd like you to do is, like, pull out your magic wand as autocratic policymaker. What do you do?
Well, you know, the goal of Goose Creek Community Land Trust, which is, you know, we have creating some model housing that we hope will inspire the market, but also then creating the rules that would lead the market to implement the solution. Have a lot less bureaucracy, have a lot less, you know, the city kills you with their scrutiny, and of course there's good intentions all about that. But the major changes that I would make is, we described it in this pilot housing initiative that developer Scott Holton helped us come up with when I got the NIMBYs and the YIMBYs together in the Back Porch Initiative, and this idea that we do some pilots and show people how you can do really beautiful housing and how it can include lots of people.
Yeah.
So the housing pilot is an end around zoning, which is such a contentious issue. So just build some things that show people, oh, we would like to go towards, you know, Fobahn in Germany, 6,000 people living in this newish, it's been 30 years now, they've been developing this 90 acres, and you can have a car, but you have to park it in a parking area near your house. And they're mostly 3- and 4-story buildings. People love it. It's like a beautiful town. Everyone's happy. It's a lot like Boulder. So the wand waving.
Yeah, the wand waving.
I would say three things.
Okay.
Keeping in mind where we want to go. We want to have a beautiful town, see the mountains, healthy air, safe streets, fun to move around, you know, diverse, vital population that has a lot of diversity in it, strong economy.
Climate friendly. Let's quit giving over all this space to cars.
More than just climate friendly, I mean, we could inspire the world. Like, here's a rich, privileged town that was responsible. America's responsible for a big part of the climate problem, and we recognize our responsibility, and we said, hey, we can make this a much better town. We can inspire a bunch of other places to do the very same thing and show how it's better for everyone.
And bring people in, too.
Bring people in. And so...
it's just a funny contrast to Gary Wachner's point of view, which is like, we should keep doing what we're doing because it has this positive effect of pushing people out of our city. And having people in Boulder is bad because they have even higher carbon footprints than everybody else. And I like that's... That makes me want to swear and get angry. You know, it's like, really? That's your argument?
I hope we can evolve.
Fewer people living in more housing units and.
Well, we should do a show just on that, how, you know, people are bad. You know, there's bedrooms for people, but there's Boulder's idea, which is that people are bad.
Yeah.
And if you have more people, it will be bad in so many ways. And, I think.
Well, I'm certainly thankful that population trends are leveling off, and
right.
I wouldn't want more exponential growth of the 20th century. That's definitely going to have a huge impact on the planet. But I don't think that population. You know, thinking about population, you can do that in a local way, right?
Like, that's right.
Like to say, oh, the solution is, we'll start here. Push people out to shrink
but,
our population.
And then ruin our own health. Yeah. Then we have more cars here. Yeah. We have more. So we need to control. So thinking about the future, my three, since you gave me the chance.
I'm sorry, I want you to interrupt
me. I'm not saying that. But I feel like we can all gain by moving towards a much lower car and certainly... no fossil fuel cars, like in 3 years. Let's do it in 3 years. Let's buy 15,000 Leafs and make them or 10. You know, we anyway. So shared cars.
Yeah.
Mostly non. And then you can auction. You know, there's like 1,000 people want to drive around a big fossil fuel car. We'll auction the right for that. Let's make a lot of money. Let's have the richest people drive around in Hummers. You know, fine, electric.
Well,
anyway,
I don't know. My immediate reaction to that is I was listening to the War on Cars. War on Cars, best podcast ever.
Yes.
And they were talking about the new Ford pickup.
Oh yeah, yeah. Electric. I listened to that.
And it has so much electric capacity.
That's right.
That's equivalent to like he penciled it out. It was like literally hundreds of electric assist bicycles. And I do love the idea that we share cars because we need cars to get around for, you know, we're not gonna all be on bikes tomorrow. There's all kinds of accessibility reasons and logistics.
But a lot of us could. But there's no reason why, you know, most of us can't get around by bikes and walking in transit.
Yeah,
and we, so that brings up the other one.
Okay.
Since I'm trying
go ahead.
Of you know, densifying all the places that we can in this way of, you know, like 10% luxury, 10 or 15% subsidized, and mostly middle income for sale units that have moderation of their appreciation. You can make some. Yep. Then so much of the housing gets into that. And then with all the rest of the housing, we start to densify that around in the same way. So you know, in the community land trust system, when you go to build that housing, what was a rancher or, you know, that becomes of 3, 4, 5, 6, you know, whatever unit makes, whatever development makes sense financially without a big subsidy,
yep.
Then the land there gets donated to the nonprofit. And the investors make, you know, a good part of their return from the tax benefit, which is so much simpler than the low-income tax credits, which is another thing that's wrong with the affordable housing program.
So the idea is, I don't think you've ever spelled this out for me before. Uh-huh. So the idea is, I'm a developer, I buy this single property, or maybe is it possible to buy a few properties and aggregate them?
Sure.
I'm going to build something that makes economic sense to me as a developer.
Within the rules. We have rules in Boulder that say you can do this.
So let's say I buy a small bungalow, a 1,000 square foot bungalow.
That's right.
And I'm going to replace it with a 6-unit row houses.
Maybe, or like
micro condos,
condos, okay. Like we could do.
And then, because I'm allowed to do that, the thing I give up is the land goes into the land trust. So I make the money from the development, but now the land goes in the land trust. That's the exchange.
That's right. And then that land is taken out of the speculative market, just like we did with open space.
Cool.
We took open space. So
yeah,
then what the market does then in Boulder, just like we added a bunch of single-family homes after the war, we didn't let any African-Americans buy them, but we created all these single-family homes. The market did this thing. Okay, yeah. So now the market is going to do this really beneficial thing,
yeah.
of bringing in people without cars, you know, shared. Then it's all the key things are appreciation moderation, shared vehicles, and those are the two big ones. Yeah, and land donation, sorry.
Yeah.
Shared cars, land donation, and appreciation moderation. So then you have a whole new way of housing.
That's really beautiful because, you know, it sort of answers the implied question I had earlier about, like, we want market forces.
That's right.
To work with us and to push this along. We don't want all the pathology that comes with, you know, the distortions that free markets create, right? Where people monopolize
greed
and paranoia come in.
That's what Hunter Levins and Paul Hawkins said, that markets make a good servant, a bad master, and a worse religion.
Yeah.
So markets have never been free. Governments are people are always involved in trying to get the market to have a good outcome. And in Boulder, that outcome is just for wealthy people. That's what the land market does, is give more wealth to wealthy people.
Yeah. So wouldn't it be cool just to sort of give the antidote to that? Wouldn't it be cool, or the antecedent? I don't know what the right word is. Wouldn't it be cool if Boulder was filled with lots of middle-class people who had a bit of equity that was, and you know, growing that prosperity.
That's right.
And it was a demographic that was diverse, and yeah, I think that would be way better than just, you know, we have our modern-day land barons and.
Well, and we don't want to attack the single-family homeowners in their single-family homes, but we could certainly stop any speculative, you know, McMansionization of single-family homes. Like, why do we need more wealthy, you know, why should we attract a bunch of wealthy people from other places? That's what's happening now with all these luxury condos. That's not a bunch of working people at Whole Foods, you know, not wanting to commute, like their shift ends at 9 or 10 or whatever, and then they got to drive to Erie or wherever. And, you know, Thornton.
Cool.
So we could do it. we could live, and that's kind of going back to what Boulder was without the black people.
Do we have council people that are running for city council that have this vision? How do we find those people and get them to run for city council? I mean, are you going to run? Are you ready to announce your candidacy?
Well, I would love. I think it's great to serve, and I think what's a more important question. I think there are some cool people, and at this time, Raucous Caucus is coming up. But I think what's more important is that we have a lot of people promoting that.
Yeah, that's
because
right.
Politicians, they have their own. They have to get elected. They have their own way. Yeah, they have to. And so we have to show them that there is a better way, and there's a lot of people for that. And then they go, oh, yeah, well, cool. These people elected me. I think I'm going to do. And that's what this 100 Days initiative I'm trying to promote is. In the 100 days of, starting January 2022, we've worked out some very specific things, and we hope you guys will...
Okay, so now you've referred to this a couple of times, but I actually don't know anything about it.
How can we move towards this healthier, more diverse, more prosperous, more beautiful town, specifically, and we've been kicking that can down the road for 20 years in this city. We have betrayed the middle class.
So in that program that you're outlining, there's going to be this land exchange program for community land trust. Is that a central thing? Or?
Well, to me, given the NIMBY, YIMBY, people haven't seen it yet. They're all from Missouri, it turns out. Everyone in Boulder needs to, we need to show them.
What's that phrase, they're all from Missouri?
Well, Truman said, I'm from Missouri and you need to show me. So that's in there. It's the show me state.
I see.
So I guess now they want to be shown guns and poverty. But anyway, so sorry, since I lived for a few years in Cape Girardeau, the home of Rush Limbaugh. But the whole idea is to show people how that it can be good. So that's a policy, show people don't. Reformers try to go too far often, and then they lose a bunch of people, make a bunch of enemies, and they get a bunch of adversaries, and then the reform efforts are slowed down as the counterattack comes in. And so Democrats, when they come in, have good ideas often, or sometimes, and then they create a bunch of opposition. So, the idea of the 100 days in Boulder is to do move clearly in a few directions, but do it in a way that can be sustained and can bring us together to see that it works, like we did with open space. Space is a great example. Huge program, $1 billion, a third of the land area of Boulder County preserved or in easement.
Cool, thanks for sharing that.